Lace up your boots and grab your mouthguards. It's time for the Rugby Wrap, the podcast about all things Western Force and the game we love.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Wrap, proudly brought to you by Leap Strategies. My name is Mick Collis. Joining me as we pass the halfway mark in Super Rugby, Wallaby 735, Mitch Hardy. Mitch, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too, Mickey. And like the solar eclipse that only happens every once in a while, we're blessed with the presence of one Heath Tessman tonight.
Oh, I know, it's very special. But before we get on to that, now, you were last podcast you were mentioning you were doing a bit of refereeing during the week. How'd that go?
Mate, I'm exhausted. I'm still recovering from a big weekend of Masters rugby. So we had eight teams in the Have a Fun competition, which their skill level left a lot to be desired, the old boys. And then the girls were out there having a good game. That was very entertaining. And we had four teams there. And then there was three teams in the Have a Crack, mate. So if you've ever seen three over 35 teams wanting to play their glory days and revisit it, and with me trying to referee them, with my attitude, it was not a pleasant sight come in hot conditions where my patience was tested just a little bit.
And right.
Yeah, I had to have words with an opposition captain and send him off the field for back chat.
I hope they filmed it. Can we see it anywhere?
Oh, it was live streamed, apparently. Yeah, oh, I don't think I'll be invited back next year.
You've done your dash. And yes, yeah. And the solar eclipse, Heath Tessman. Tess, great to see you.
Excellent to see you, gents. I thought when you were going with the eclipse reference, Mitchy, I thought you were talking about yourself. Well, yeah, you have the globe on
the silhouette
in front.
Well, so I'm just sort of just keeping myself anonymous and my head, save you blokes the punishment of looking at my ugly head.
Anonymous caller in later as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll have some comments. Now, as I'm sure you're aware, there was a surprising announcement by the Western Force this week, but we're going to sit on that one till the mailbag and we'll let Mitch Hardy off the leash in about 15 or so minutes. But we'll start with a review of Week 7 of Super Rugby Pacific. And the weekend kicked off with the Blues inflicting a record defeat over the Western Force to the tune of 50-3. It was second place on the ladder versus 12th, and that's exactly what it looked like.
Heath, you can start. I'm not even bothering with
start?
This one.
It's not. It was, yeah, it was probably it's the worst performance of the year as well from the from our boys in blue. I don't know, it was just insipid. I think I don't like using that word insipid, but it was just
insipid.
It was flat. Really flat and weak. And this was a Blues. What? How many starters did they have out? Six starters. Like, essentially, a weaker team from the Blues, and they just looked like they were going through a training run for a good part of that game. Like it looked like the Bibs versus the bloody starters, and it was disappointing, and I haven't got much to say around it either. Like the biggest disappointing parts were probably the little effort areas during the game. Like I remember, who was it? It was Funaki when he scored. Like it was their fourth try. It was only like the 25th minute or something like that. Ball goes to ground, kind of force guys just standing around looking at it, hoping it's going to roll over the sideline. Instead, a Blues player dives on it, keeps the ball in.
Yeah.
Like, keeps the ball alive. Then they support brilliantly. But it's like it was just all those little flat things. And that's what they're just lacking, that bit of intensity, bit of punch, bit of want to compete. Like they're hoping that ball goes in over the touchline and that they can just have a break in play, have a stop. Whereas, the Blues team are looking to keep it in, looking to keep playing, looking to keep attacking. And I think that kind of that summed up, the attitudes of both teams in that match. Mm.
And I don't think Simon Cron issued an apology after this one, but he wouldn't have been far off apologising. Mitch, was there anything positive to come out of it?
No. I watched the replay, Mickey. I didn't get home in enough time to watch the full game live. But, when you look at the result and you look at the insipid performance across from 1 to 23 for that matter, it's a tough, without making excuses, it's a tough gig to go from the wet conditions in Fiji to Auckland. And Auckland's a tough gig to play any day of the week where you do tend to be flat there. And Australian teams tend to always be flat in Auckland. But, you've got to expect more from your players than that. Like, it's all well and good to get excited about beating the Reds the other week and get excited about that. And everyone says, well, that's the force we all deserve to see and watch. But one in seven is not good enough. And, you know, and I've got to start bringing into question, you know, the, I'll start bringing in selection questions. You know, the depth in the squad is certainly not there after making a lot of song and dance about key signings this year and then not performing at a consistent level. Like, it, come on, we're 7 weeks in now. Like, you either got to wield the axe and give other players opportunities within your squad, or you got to persevere with what you got and make them perform. So at some point, Simon Cron's coaching record's got to be looked at as part of this, because he talks a good game, but it's not being delivered at the moment.
Well, he's locked in for another 2 years after after this year.
Well, you know, the buck sometimes stops with coaches and the buck sometimes stops with players. I mean, you look at the pressure Darren Coleman's on.
Yeah.
No one's criticised the Waratahs of their poor performance this year. No one's singled out any players, but we seem to be very quick to criticise the Western Force players. But is it the game plan and the way they're being motivated and coached that's part of the problem here?
Mm.
Let's throw that out there as a bit of a conversation piece. But,
yeah.
You know... Prinsloo, the new number eight, very good game, promising signs, failed to deliver against his Kiwi counterparts. You know, the Nick White, Donaldson combination, you know, Max Bury at 15, you know, like he hasn't been given an opportunity to play 10 hardly at all this year, and he was a standout last year.
Hmm.
You know, when are we going to actually draw a line in the sand and say, okay, you guys have had your go, time for someone different to have a crack and see what they can do? Because the season's gone. They're not making finals.
Yeah.
So the season is gone now. How do they build for the future rather than just picking the same 15 blokes every week?
Yeah.
And just- I'd love to see, sorry, on the back of that selection, like from round one, pretty consistently, definitely against the Kiwi teams, against the Drew as well, like they've just been completely out-muscled across the park. So I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, what's Crono got to lose in, like, let's just pick my biggest pack. Like, yeah, that Brumbies pack, the short they had on the weekend, the shortest pack five player was, like, 194 centimetres tall. They just went, let's go big. This is how we're going to play them. Like, let's adapt and let's see how can we play some of these teams. Because, you know, the Tars, we've got the Tars coming up, the Crusaders, not small teams as well. Sure, we're slide on. But, you know, if we do need to change, let's change, you know, with a theme or, you know, with an emphasis on what we want to then achieve, not just like change for change's sake. And that's one of the things I wouldn't just mind seeing him go with some size at least in the pack and go from there.
But you've got to be careful you don't go with, like, the Sam Carter's not a small fry, but he's just a plotter. Like, you understand why he was cut from his Northern Hemisphere team now, because he's just well behind the pace.
Mm.
Like, why are we signing blokes that aren't on the pace? That's what I don't understand. I do not understand it. You've got to do more than just sign a name. I mean, we'll get to that later. But, you know, Sam Carter is clearly way off Super Rugby pace.
Yep. Yeah, he's not contributing, is he? And then the lineouts test, like that, they had some opportunities, but had a couple of lineouts, you know, 10 or so metres out, but just stuffed them up. What's stopping them converting those opportunities into points? Like the ball gets thrown. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts.
There's a lot of moving parts, as we always talk. I don't know if it's just like a number of new guys coming in. You know, obviously Sam Carter, someone we just touched on. Like, sure, he's experienced, but then you got Reid Princep coming in then as well. New front rowers. I think one of our reserve front rowers they picked up over there, didn't they?
So, well, I mean, but Heath, what's the point in them taking Reggie Churchwood on a off-season tour and having him involved in all the preseason if you're not going to give him an opportunity during the tournament?
Well, and I'm sure we're going to cover that as well later in the piece when we do get to signing versus developing. But yeah, I mean, I don't understand. Sure, like you know, Reggie came out, like, using him as an example. All those development guys that played against the Cheetahs and have had some time in the trials this year, you know, they all found things that they had to work on to improve their game, but everyone's got those gaps in their game. Like, you know, why is he not getting an opportunity then to at least showpiece, at least get that experience, get that first cap, that first time running out, warming up, you know, sure, getting into strife, but also there's chances that, you know, these players succeed as well. So,
because they're not going to lose. Because I saw that battler running around. I thought, who's this bloke? Because it reminded me of, in the 1994, UWA went on a rugby tour to Hawaii, and that was the last game on a three-match tour, and they were short, and they got the guy who hired the surfboards to come in and play to be the 15th man. And that's what it was like in New Zealand. They just, I don't know where they found that bloke. Was he just, who knows? But just
plenty of rugby players around, Mickey.
Oh, there certainly are, but just it was a real surprise. Just I thought, who's
mate
this bloke?
Mate of a mate. I got a cousin. He's got his boots in the car.
Yeah, it just and look, I looked at some of the stats, which are quite telling as well. So the Force had 187 passes to the Blues, 119, but the Blues ended up scoring eight tries to nil. They had 7 line breaks to the Force 1, run meters 550 to 301. The Force 140 tackles to the Blues 106, and missed tackles, the Western Force 28, the Blues 6.
Wooshka.
Yeah. So 28-3 at half time, 22-0 in the second half. And Tess, it was like in a post training session.
And that's what we touched on that right at the beginning of the season. Like, you know, we spoke about how Force came into this competition this year. They had the lowest points, they had the lowest amount of tries scored as well, coming into the season as well. And we looked at the squad and we were wondering, you know, where are the points going to come from? And we just haven't got that player. We're dogged, we're fit, we want to fight, but who's, you know, how are we going to break these games open? We unfortunately were just missing that. Like we can run teams ragged and we can wear them down, we can take advantage of that, but can we create and then just blow teams off the park as well? And I just, we're just kind of missing that, like what Manasa Mataeli could do for us last year, like just turn it on, or Zach Kiribidji, like our two wingers.
Kiribidji, had that ability to
create something.
Finish. It's what Corey Till's providing to the Brumbies at the moment.
Absolutely.
Give the ball to him in some space, he'll score you a try.
Yeah.
But you've got to create the space first. Now, how do you do that? Well, through good lead-up work. You know, you look at the performance of Tua, the inside centre from the Brumbies at the moment. He gets through the shoulder, he gets through the advantage line, sets a platform to create the space. And you got guys like Charlie Cale, who's doing a mountain of work, not only in the flashy bits you see, but also around the paddock to make himself constantly available to be in the game. So none of these, you've got to look at the teams that are successful, look, always got players in motion and they've always got players in the game. There's never a stagnant piece. You look at why the Hurricanes are more successful this year than previous years is because their skill level and their discipline at the skill is a lot higher this year, and they're actually able to provide the patience as a team when they're actually making those initial inroads into an opposition defensive line to actually then capitalise on that. So that's what the Force aren't doing. They're not got 15 bodies in motion all the time, working off the ball and creating that indecision in the defensive line. And when they do break a shoulder, they haven't then got the mental game nous and capacity to then capitalise on it. We've seen glimpses of it with Ben Donaldson this year, and I still think he's playing a lot better football this year than he had previous 2 years with the Waratahs, with his ability to break the line. But there's no one else other than him really showing us any real attacking nous.
Yeah.
But then the defensive thing, 28 missed tackles, like they've got to be better than that. You've got to be more accurate at the tackle than that.
Because I was watching Donaldson on the weekend. Yeah, if he goes forward, we look good. But if he gives it, nothing happens.
Get stuck. And that's sort of the trade-offs you have with the likes of Hamish Stewart. Like Hamish Stewart's not an attacking player. He'll be safe, he'll be secure, and he'll defend really well. But he won't give you another attacking arm at 12. But he'll be very reliable at 12 in defence, and he'll be very reliable at 12 as far as a platform to play off. But if you don't have a fullback that's used to coming up into the line and playing and hitting the line, or a winger that'll work off their wing, or a back row that's coming around the corner and looking to carry, little things like that. I mean, you know, you just got to look at the work rate of Darcy Swain. And again, I'll keep going back to Brumby players, but that was the sort of game I really got engrossed in on the weekend. Darcy Swain is physical when he's got the ball and his carry. He's physical in defence and he's physical at the breakdown. And he's always looking every single part of the game is physical, physical, physical. And then there's an element of skill in there when it comes to line-out time and restarts. So he for mine, epitomises what a type 5 player should be doing at the moment around Australia rugby.
Yeah. Yeah. So, not pretty. So, look, they've got the bye this week. And then they're gearing up for the Crusaders on the 20th of April. So hopefully between now and then they can find something. I don't know what it's going to be, but they can't keep going how they're going. In the other games, the Rebels, that you know, the will they or won't they team, 40-21 over the Drua. Drua got out to a good start, but the Rebels fought back. And then the Drua just lost the plot. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights of that, but Frank Lamardi, the elbow on Josh Canham's head, I think he got up 20 stitches. And then that Koroduadua with the headbutt. Yeah. So they're both, at the time we're recording, they haven't been handed any suspensions, but they've got to go for a long time. We talk about the protection of the head, and you've got two blokes just targeting the head intentionally.
They were cranky, weren't they? They got cranky. They just got rattled and got cranky, and their discipline just went out the window. It was and they've had a tough couple of weeks, tough games, and they looked tired and they got cranky, and the Rebels were relentless and finished the game off really well. I thought, you know, even just talking about Canham with his elbow to the back of the head, that young bloke had a really good game, all-round good game. Like, didn't do too much wrong as a young lock. And, and their pressure and defence was good. And then they took their opportunities when they presented themselves as well. Hmm. What do you reckon, Heath?
But it was just, I feel like Frank Lamani hasn't intentionally elbowed him in the back of the head. It's not the popular opinion here. I feel like he's just tried to whack him with his fist.
It was a frustration lash out.
Get him off me, but he's just cleaning him up.
Caused 20 stitches to the back of a head.
But that's it. Yeah, that's the. There was blood coming out of that. Young Josh. But they were frustrated, weren't they? Because I think, you know, they've had, like you said, Mitchie, they've had some tough games, but they've had some great wins. Obviously, they've been at home. And it's always, you know, there's a lot made out of the Drua being different on the road to being at home. Like, you want to play them away if you get the chance because they haven't got the crowd behind them. You know, they play with so much more vigor when they are at home. And it was just one of those games for them where it wasn't working. They were, you know, they would have come to Melbourne thinking, all right, we can go in there, we can roll these guys, we can keep moving up the ladder. And it just wasn't going their way or quite to script. And, you could see that frustration kick in. And it's cost them.
Rebels are on a roll though,
aren't they?
What are they? Fourth spot in the ladder now.
Yeah, we'll get to the ladder, but they're right up there.
Sorry, guard dog's gone off. Sorry,
up in the territory. And then the Brumbies, Mitch, you're a big fan. 40-16, I think it was, over the Waratahs. 12 straight for the Brums.
Yeah, and they were clinical. I said it the other week, Harrison Goddard at 9 just gives him that front football and the speed of delivery. It allows Alessio to have a little bit more time and space. Again, I thought they played off a very good platform. They've got a balanced back row. I still don't like Tom Hooper as a 7, but Luke Reimer is sort of playing that off-the-bench 7 role where he can really close out a game for Steve Larkham. But I thought their tight five laid a really good platform. Their back row were very tradesmanlike, and then they had a really good back platform to play off. And the fact that they were scoring tries off the first or second or third phase through good set-piece play was just indicative that they're running into a bit of form. Waratahs, they were never in the game. Did not even look like they were going to win that game. Never. Not from the first minute to the last. Waratahs were completely shut out of that game. And I thought the Brumbies controlled it really well. Not to say the Waratahs played badly. I don't think there was any part of the game that was poor. I just felt that they're just not at that level across the board.
Yeah, I think if they were able to keep the Brumbies scoreless through that first half, I think they would have come out in that second half with a bit more vigour because they had, like you said, they had been pretty well outplayed across the park, but they were just hanging tough and they were coming in. They could have gone in at 6-9 with that score at halftime. But unfortunately, unfortunately, depending on who you're cheering for, unfortunately for the Waratahs, with Goddard sneaking over, like just spotting the opportunity and taking it, I think that was like the beginning of the end. That was like where it was really going to start falling apart for the Waratahs, unfortunately. And yeah, they just weren't able to come out in the second half and put anything together at all.
And then Tess, Angus Bell, that toe injury again as a front rower, that's obviously not a good sign.
No,
it's
not.
The same as what he'd done before.
Yeah, and that's what I haven't been able to read the report on how significant injuries yet, unfortunately. But if it is, like,
you know what
is
he
that back to
needs?
back to back now?
Yeah.
You know what he needs, Heath? He needs to know a good orthopedic surgeon that probably specializes in artificial limbs to maybe replace the bones in his foot.
Yeah.
With titanium or something? Do you know
maybe
anyone?
Maybe just a. I work a little bit higher up the body, unfortunately, so I don't, but I'm sure we can find someone
Ask
for
around.
It.
Ask around. Tell us of it's of national interest. But
could
yeah,
be
I
game
feel
changer
for,
that. Could be groundbreaking.
For Angus Bell, that's a real shame for a real good young fella. And then in the only other game, the Chiefs 68, Moana 12. And I don't know if you saw, did you see Damian McKenzie nearly got snapped in half?
What about the pass?
Beautiful.
Around the back. Yeah. Oh no, I'll just expose my rib cavity to spearheaded by Samoan and just flick it around the back of the body just so to look flashy.
Yeah, it
just
look good.
He's a freak. And they're a class team. When he's playing 10 for the Chiefs, they're a class outfit, mate. The difference between when he does play for them and when he didn't, when they lost that game when he wasn't playing, and that one, you just go, oh,
massive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like if he's not the All Black 10 this year, I'm not here.
Yeah, no, he's in good touch. So then looking at the ladder, so we've got three teams on top on 27. That's the Blues, the Hurricanes, and the Brumbies. The Chiefs in fourth spot on 23. Then the Rebels in fifth on 19, which is fantastic. The Reds in sixth on 16. Then it's the Drua and the Highlanders make up the eight. Then Moana Pacifica in ninth. The Waratahs 10th on 8 points. Crusaders 11th on 6 points. And the Western Force bringing up the rear on 5 points. So pretty tight at the top of the ladder and a real, you know, a definite top and bottom eight at the moment as we, that was basically the halfway mark of it. And in Super W results, at McGilvray, the Waratah women 45-21 over the Western Force. Western Force were gallant, but the Waratahs, that's a good team they've got running around this year. The Drua 20-7 over the Brumbies. And then the Reds 17-15 over the Rebels. So in the women's the ladder, so the Waratahs well on top. They're home and hose. They'll finish on top this week, being their last week, on 20 points. The Drua second on 13. The Western Force and the Brumbies equal on nine points in third and fourth spot. And then the Reds in fifth on four and the Rebels in sixth place on two. So the Waratahs and the Drua, the Waratahs definitely will have a home semi-final. We'll have a look at what's coming up for the Western Force women, but at the moment they probably won't sneak into a home final, but not a bad result from them. At least they'll play semi-finals. And then in the Challenge Cup in local rugby that went on this weekend, down at Southern Lions, Soaks 32-19 over the Lions. And Tess, the Lions, they put up a good show. And as we mentioned on the day on that broadcast, that probably scoreline doesn't really reflect that game.
No, it doesn't. And like we did touch on, they're going to be. They showed like how dangerous they were last year during the Fortescue Premier Grade, and they're already showing that kind of early season form. Like last year, it took them a little while to warm into it, but especially when they're playing at home, they can attack from anywhere. They can string together some just brilliant, brilliant pieces of length of field rugby, and their set piece, like their pack is improving as well. So you know the success stadium down there could be a little bit of a bogey week for some teams when they do go down there to play the Lions. And they've got a few players to come back as well. So it's it was a really entertaining game. Like that being said, Associates, they looked really good as well. Like they had a lot thrown at them by that Southern Lions team in that second half. And it wasn't all going their way, but they were clinical when it was like we said, we spoke about it on the day, but it was they would go into the 22 and I think they were scoring at least half of the time in the end. So every time they get their opportunity, they would take it and they would take it well. And that's a sign of a well-drilled and a disciplined team, especially at this time of year. So that's a good sign for Sape Missa there, the head coach at Soaks.
Yep, and great to see Ian Pryor running around in the number 9 jersey for Soaks. In the other matches, Nettie's 36 defeating the Roodogs 17, and Kalamunda 21 defeating UWA 17. And then in that second division part of the competition, Basie 55, Rockingham 6, West's Clinic 80-0 over Arcs, the Kwinana Wolves 28 defeating the Bunbury Barbarians 0, Pally 62 defeating the Mandurah Pirates 0, and Cot 34 owned a Joondalup 12. So that wraps up that week of Challenge Cup. So look, we'll take a short break. Be back to preview this weekend's rounds. You're listening to the Rugby Wrap.
G'day, I'm Connor Jenkins from Leap Strategies. If you've ever seen Mitch Hardy's boot collection, you'll know how much trouble he goes to keep them safe, especially the pink and yellow pairs. We're the same with your business data. So if you have digital assets that need protection, call Leap Strategies on 1300 77 LEAP or visit leapstrategies.com.au.
So looking ahead to week eight, and in again, it's a bye round. So Moana Reds, it's tipping time. Moana Reds, who's going to get the points?
Reds.
Yeah, Red. I mean, it doesn't.
Reds. Week off, they'll be freshened up.
I don't know where it's being played, sorry, but I don't think it matters, unfortunately. It's a Moana home ground, but unfortunately, I'm not sure.
Yep. And then the Tars Crusaders.
Ooh.
Oh, I don't think there's an ooh about it. I reckon the Crusaders.
Sydney Football Stadium?
Sydney Football Stadium. It's in Sydney. Crusaders off a last match win. They've had the bye. I reckon they've set things right.
You think Tars time is over?
I think Tars time's over. I reckon this could be the start of the Crusaders sneaking into the top eight.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'll back Heath there. I'll back his call there.
I don't know if I back myself.
This is a resurgence of the Crusaders. They're on a roll.
The Waratahs Crusaders is 10th versus 11th.
It'll be the game of the round.
Is it this week is marking, what was it, the 10-year celebration of when they played each other in the Super Rugby Grand Final?
Oh, is it really? Wow. There you go. And I'll tell you what will be the match of the round, Hurricanes Chiefs, 2v4.
Oh, yes. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to go the Hurricanes this one. I know the Chiefs are the favourites, but the Canes are at home.
Are they the Chiefs the favourites?
If Dame McKenzie plays the Chiefs, they've got to be favourites. But the Hurricanes, with their consistency and the way they're going about things at the moment at home, I'm going to give the Canes the nod there.
Playing in front of 45 roaring fans there in Wellington. I reckon it'll be the Canes as well. Like you said, it'll be the game of the round. It'll be the best one to watch. But, you know, without getting too far ahead, speaking of best one to watch, the next one, the Rebels-Highlanders game.
Rebels-Highlanders, yeah.
That's a big game for the Rebels, to announce if they are seriously a fifth place team.
Yeah.
They're coming up against, you know, well, not the worst performing Kiwi team, but the Highlanders find themselves on the cusp of the eight. It'll be a big, big test for the Rebels to really show what they are made of.
Because if the Rebels get up, they'll move to 23 points if they don't get a bonus point. Highlanders will stay on 11. So the Highlanders are currently in eighth spot. So eighth is on 11 and the Rebels find themselves on 23. Like, they're starting to build a fairly decent buffer.
There's a bit of a gap, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a really important Rebels. One for them.
Let's go the Rebels. Rebels bandwagon.
Yeah. We'll all get on board.
I won't, though. I'll tip the Highlanders.
You tip the Highlanders. Oh, I hate this one. And then Super W. It's week 5 of 5. They're last week. So the Waratahs against the Reds.
No, the Tars. Tars will be Tars. Too good.
Yeah, Tars,
be
too yeah. good. On a roll. And
the yep. Brumbies fourth. So third versus fourth. That's at 12:35 on Saturday.
In Canberra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You'd like to think the girls will have a good chance of that one, but I think the Brumbies home game will be the point of difference. It'll be close. Brumbies by 3-5.
And then the Rebels drawer?
Drawer.
Yeah, the draw. So I think the top four is pretty set. So it's fantastic for the Western Force women to know that they're in that semi-final. But as always, it'd be great to go in with some momentum with a victory over the Brumbies. And I looked, had a look on rugby.com. So the Super Rugby women's semi-finals are on Thursday, April 18. So they'll play this Saturday, and then they've got their semi-finals on the Thursday. And then the grand final is on the April 28 at Ballymore. So
what's going on with the Sunday?
Yeah, I don't know. What's going on with the Thursday?
Thursday and Sunday. What's going on with that?
No idea. Just seems very odd for a semi-final. Oh, geez,
I hope they don't stick them out at some club ground on a Thursday for semi-finals.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it seemed odd, but that was on the website. Said Thursday, April 18 for the semi-finals. Sunday, April 28. Ballymore, great venue for the final. But that Thursday semi seemed a bit odd. Could be wrong, but that's what it says on the website.
That's bizarre.
It is
That is
bizarre.
bizarre.
And then the Challenge Cup here in WA on Saturday. So there's Cott versus Keller, Soaks against Nettie's, UWA against Joondalup, and Wanneroo against the Southern Lions. And then the other matches, Pally Play, Perth Bayswater, West Kwinana, Mandurah Rockingham, and Arcs versus Bunbury. So that Cott Keller, Soaks Nettie's getting to the pointy end of the...
When does the bloody comp start, Mick?
So the following week. So April 20 is round one of the Fortescue Premier Grade. So
okay.
So this is kind of the wrapping up of the Challenge Cup. Then the final will turn up. But then, so the whole comp gets underway on April 20. And that takes us to the mailbag. And as alluded to earlier in the show, the Western Force have announced this week that they've signed Kirtley Beale until the end of the Super Rugby season on an injury replacement deal. So Western Force head coach Simon Cron, he was attracted by Beale's experience and hopes the playmaker can help his squad develop. He's played at 3 World Cups, almost 100 Wallabies caps, and he's won a Super Rugby title. He's 35 years old. Now, Mitch Hardy, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is bad and 10 is good, where do you rate the signing of Kirtley Beale?
I feel like you stitched me up here, Mick, because of my text messages over the weekend. But no, I have no idea why mid-season you would do this. No idea whatsoever. This is a complete and utter brain fart from the Western Force franchise. I mean, we've made some bad mistakes over the last whatever many years it's been, nearly 20. But I reckon this is probably the top of the list now. This
oh,
is,
really?
This is... Tip me over the edge. I have no idea whatsoever why you would engage Kirtley Beale to finish your season off for you. Like, you can put your rhetoric out in the press that, oh, you know, he's going to help us develop young players and, you know, he'll be good for the squad, blah, blah, blah. Well, if he was any good, one of the other franchises would have snapped him up. Like, oh, my God, I just don't know how to... Like, there's just no words to explain why you would do that when you're meant to be developing your own and you're meant to have a squad of X number of players at the start of the season. Like, I understand they lost Harry Potter, but Harry Potter doesn't play in the same position as Kirtley Beale. Max Bury is the bloke I feel sorry for because he's been completely shafted this season, completely. After having an outstanding season last year, he's been told he's got to play fullback. Then Harry Potter comes along, so he got pushed to the bench. And now Kirtley Beale's been signed. Where's Max Bury going to play for the next few weeks? Left, right out. That's where. Mate.
Down at West Scarborough.
Yeah.
Not good. I don't see any value in it. Like, you can put him out there as your pin-up boy and he can do your media for you. And, yeah, he'll probably go out on the paddock. Like, I watched him play for Ramick the other day in the club championship stuff. Yeah, he's a good footballer. I'm not saying he's not a bad footballer. But I'm not seeing any value in signing a 35-year-old player who's well past his prime for a team that is meant to be priding itself on developing players.
And I think the Western Force are currently 12th. They're not going to make the semi-finals. So if they sign him and the Western Force finish 11th,
has sign that got him for any 3 years. Benefit? Come on, let's go Simon Cron. Sign him up for 3 years if you think he's that good.
Because, why not, in terms of the ladder and where they finish, why not put six games into a young bloke as opposed to six games into a bloke that's, I find it really a strange decision.
I gave it a
3 out of 10, three and a half out of 10.
I'd give it a 1.5. But, like, okay, Rashaan Passatoe is injured for the season. I don't know what's happened to Campbell Parado, whether he's still on the books or not. I'm not sure. But you know, you've got to have a plan B. If you've gone into a season with no plan B, what are you doing?
What about some, like, where there was, you know, Rewider Biddle? He got time to, like, we were talking about the Cheetahs games earlier.
The Cheetahs guys, yeah.
He got time. Who's the was it Ronan Leahy? He was one of the wingers, one of the star wingers of that
under
of 20s. That at that competition. Like, you know, why not? Like, how, once again, like, these guys have got to play sooner or later.
Yeah. Oh, mate, if I was one of those young developing players, I'd be straight onto the agent saying, get me something somewhere else. What's the point of being here?
Because you're not getting a look in. And it's funny because I was listening to I went back and I listened to Niamh O'Connor's, the CEO of the Western Force. She, a guest on our podcast in episode number 3, she was talking about how their whole plan was to foster the growth of players in WA. And as we've spoken about, you've got, you know, Jack Hardy and Clay Ewan playing over for the Brumbies A. We've got all these guys that played Force A that aren't getting a look in. And one thing that she said, and look, I'm not bagging Kirtley Beale, but one of the things Niamh said was recruitment is more around character first.
Character.
If we don't get character, then we're not even going to look at the skill set. So she said that's been a change in the way they recruit. And I just googled Kirtley Beale rap sheet, and we haven't got time to read them all, but here are some highlights. In March 2013, Beale is fined $40,000 and suspended indefinitely following a punch-up with Melbourne Rebels teammates Cooper Vuna and Gareth Delve. May of that same year, suspended by the Melbourne Rebels for breaching an alcohol ban. October 2014, AAU confirms its integrity unit is investigating an alleged episode of verbal abuse by Beale towards a member of the Wallabies management staff on the team's flight from Johannesburg to Brazil. And most recently last year, it was in the headlines about his high-profile court case. So I'm not sure how they define character, and he certainly comes with some baggage, so it does seem odd.
Odd? You're so polite, Mick. You're so polite. Anyway, that's fine. If they want to recruit him, that's cool. He might, when he gets named in 23, a few more punters might turn up to watch.
I hope that he, as a Western Force fan, I hope that he comes in and he does do something and, you know, help if there are any young guys that he can help as part of that wider training group. Fantastic. And if you can create some confidence in amongst the squad and draw some more fans to the game, that's all positive. But I just think long term, it's a real short term. It's not going to save the season, and it's not going to help next season, I don't think. But I guess time will tell.
We'll see.
What would you give it? Between 1 and 10 on the scale?
Looking forward to Ben Donaldson coming off the bench.
I think it's below 5.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, it's good for Kirtley. All the upside's there for Kirtley. He can come in, he can help some win games.
Him and his manager.
But I don't see the positive result for the Force. For what it does, what it may do to the group as well, the message it sends. For the guys that are here.
Do you think they've got him on a a win bonus? Did he get a win bonus or were they signing for a...
If it was me writing this contract, it would be pretty strict and it would be heavily incentivized.
Yeah, it'd have to be, surely.
I thought it was an April Fool's joke that just so happened to be lost in the post.
Wasn't loading. The Wi-Fi was no good at Western Force HQ.
Oh, and on April Fool's, I've got to give it a shout out to The Raw. They put this wonderful thing out about how Rugby Australia had signed David Warner in
culture
some role.
Consultant.
And I just started.
You were hook, line, and sinker, were you?
I was thinking, surely not. I was starting my soliloquy right away. And then I thought, oh, God, that was very good. So well done to The Raw. So moving on in the wrap. So reports have surfaced overnight that the creation of the Club World Cup, that moved one step closer after the Europeans signed an initial agreement for it to start in 2028. So it's where all the competitions across the world, so the Gallagher Premiership, the Top 14, United Rugby Championship, they'll finish in May, which makes room for it. The top 8 from there will play against the top 6 Super Rugby Pacific teams, and there'll be another 2 teams, probably from Japan, to make up the 16-team comp. It'll take place over a 4-week period in June with a round of 16, quarterfinal, semi, and a final. So it means that Super Rugby competition, which normally finishes at the end of June, would have to finish earlier. So it'd start in early Feb in 2028 to be aligned with those clubs in the north. So what do you think?
39 degrees when the Force played their first
Could you
home
imagine?
Game.
What do you think about the idea of the Club World Cup?
I love that idea, Mick. I love the idea of the clubs that are high profile, that are winning stuff all around the world, all get together and play off for stuff. I think that's great. The timing of it, you know, I'd be really comfortable to see that played across the that June test series window, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, don't compromise Super Rugby any more than you have to, because I think we've got a little bit of a sweet spot there for Super Rugby, and I think it needs to exist in that window. But yeah, I would have liked to seen it sort of that June July window leading into maybe a few tests, the rugby championships, and that sort of stuff. But yeah, there's got to be a way that a club championship like that can exist or coexist with that inbound test match window. There's got to be a happy medium there, I think.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to see it. And even if you use it as a breeding ground for the next up-and-coming test players, you know what I mean? So it's a step up, but, okay, maybe the best of the best aren't playing in it, but it's still the clubs brands all playing, and it's this next international tier, global tier of rugby, you know what I mean?
Hmm.
And that's going to be the challenge for those. That's going to be the challenge for all those rugby nations as well, how they manage their super teams or, you know, their premiership teams with that window of the test window coming up as well, and how they can best sell the competition.
Yeah.
When was it? What year was it? When was it
2028. 2028.
After the World Cup. Yeah. So it'd be, I think it kind of supersedes a lot of the A program stuff that otherwise countries would be looking at. You could probably say, you know what, we'll let that be our A program because we've actually got a bigger base. It actually creates a bigger base for your A programs that underpin your test teams. So, I think it'll be Northern Hemisphere driven. So we're always going to be playing poor cousin to the Northern Hemisphere clubs, I think, on this one because they've got the cash.
Yeah, but it would be great. Profile. It'd be great to watch some of the the best team in an English comp or the French comp playing against the Chiefs or Hurricanes. Yeah. I mean, that'd be good. It'd be good
footy. Toulouse and Stade Francais and all these guys, Leicester and Leinster and all those club, really strong club teams playing against Southern Hemisphere clubs. I think it'd be fantastic.
But they'll have to go all in, though. They won't be able to treat it like a bit of an anything, is it? Because it's a World Cup, isn't it? It's not an annual competition. I'm just wrapping my head around it now. It's only every 4 years, though, isn't it?
I believe. Yeah, I don't actually know.
Maybe it's not an annual thing.
I don't think it's – no. I don't think so. Not from what
I don't like it. I don't like it then. It needs to be annually.
Yeah, I'd like it to be annually.
World Cup. Like an annual thing would be great, but then it's
a club World Cup. Yeah, okay.
But I think as a World Cup, it's only going to be kind of
every 4 years.
Every four.
Yeah, right.
So I guess they will have to. There will have to be an allowance from the national bodies for some dispensation for club teams to go put their strongest group out there.
Yeah, okay. It will be good. But yeah, it'd be great if it was every year, but I mean, it's still good if it's every four, but it would have been fantastic every year knowing that that you're kind of playing for
every
that as
four.
Well.
Come on.
Yeah, anyway. And then a rugby fan in Brisbane has been convicted for abusing World Cup match officials on Facebook in a landmark case that World Rugby were very excited about. So a guy called Aaron Isaiah, he was convicted by Australian authorities of one count of using a carriage service to menace or harass via online communication. After pleading guilty, he used social media to abuse the TMO Brian McNeice, his wife, and his children after an incident in England's World Cup win over Samoa, given a $1,000 fine, suspended for 12 months. So I think terrific that they're actually doing that, but it just seems a bit odd. So really nothing. You got nothing. You got a suspended fine.
Yeah, they come down on him and it's not even a it's a wrap on the you know the worst part about it is that he's being named in the news like he's
yeah
not
that's
actually,
yeah that's the worst thing
and so I guess that's you know they I guess they're going to be using that so that you know anyone else who is thinking about it they could end up being named and shamed
named,
so that's
named
a that's
shamed.
A
yeah
that's
which
a
is
deterrent
a step forward. Yeah it's a step forward because that's I mean yeah, this it's rife and we've seen as we've spoken about before good officials leaving because they just can't handle the abuse anymore. We saw Mitch Hardy up in Darwin with the Masters getting frustrated as a referee so he knows what we're talking about.
Getting abused and abusing as well.
Yeah, so it goes both ways with Mitch. So it's great though that World Rugby is actually acting on some of this stuff and it is a deterrent and I think it's certainly great. And then we always bag Rugby Australia with their scheduling. But apparently in the Super Rugby Aupiki, I think it's pronounced, which is the Blues Women versus the Chiefs Manawa, which that's the Super Rugby equivalent in New Zealand. They've got their final on Saturday, and it's roughly the same time as the New Zealand Warriors play Manly in the NRL. And the Warriors are huge over there, so social media is saying, why not make the women's game on the Sunday at 2 o'clock so families can get there? So, again, it just seems very odd that these people don't actually look and see what's going on around that time because that's been a good comp, that women's comp, but there's going to be a lot of eyes and a lot of interest on the Warriors game. So it's a bit of a shame that that happens. And then there was an article on the weekend and that Hamish Bidwell wrote it. It could have been Mitch Hardy writing it because it was titled, What's the
it's
Point of
ghost
Sevens?
Name. It's my ghostwriter name, Hamish
What's
Bidwell.
The Point of Sevens, he says. And so it should be used to develop test players, and we're better at doing that than Super Rugby is. And it was good. He makes some good points. So he's saying that Super Rugby, it's neither useful or it's not an ornament at the moment, and we've got these bye weeks and stuff going on. So he's saying that the Sevens in the past, it used to make elite All Blacks out of players. You had Christian Cullen, Jonah Lomu, and Sevens would do more to develop those players than Super Rugby is doing right now. And he says, take Caleb Clark. He's not without experience in Seven Rugby. He said his one discernible trick is to run over people, which isn't that tricky if they can tackle. So he said, for a guy who grew up playing centre, his passing isn't up to scratch. Then there's Rico Ioane. Nothing wrong with his evasive skills, but again, he's a bloke who can't or won't pass, and Sevens would help sort that out. So he's saying that Sevens used to be the means by which they would prepare players for All Blacks duty. And he said the All Blacks wanted to play a running passing game in 15-a-side rugby, and they'd hone those skills in the Sevens, yet now the calendar makes it very hard to do. And he said that the Sevens used to be a pre-season period for the players. They'd get rock hard, they'd be fit, and they'd have confidence. And he said the other reason he was talking about the Sevens, Hong Kong was on, and he said that's where the legends such as Lomu and Cullen, they announced themselves to the world. But the 2024 edition of that tournament has come and gone without too many people actually noticing. And he's saying, what's the point of the men's team if it's not to develop the best players for Test rugby and to showcase that talent to the world? And he said, your rank and file Olympic viewer will see New Zealand on the seventh schedule and they just assume that it's the All Blacks. But the reality is that couldn't be further from the truth. So, and he's saying that despite the men, this is New Zealand, despite our men and women both running supreme in Hong Kong, partly because there's no male players with a profile to attract an audience, that he just said what's the point of sevens? And he does have a point.
I think he's trying to make a point, but does he have a point? Is probably I think he does. I watch most of the Hong Kong Sevens on the weekend, and there's some developing players there in that New Zealand Sevens outfit who won it on the weekend, by the way, against some very good opposition. What they've got to decide, what the countries have got to decide is, are they going to field their best Sevens teams week in, week out for these tournaments? So, like the Hong Kong Sevens this year probably didn't have every country's best squads playing for one reason or the other. Like the French guys didn't have Dupont playing, for example. But we know that the previous tournament, or the LA tournament that he did play, he made a massive difference. So I think Sevens has got a place in the player pathway, and we need to have our future Wallabies or future All Blacks coming through that system in one way, shape or another. Like if I use Corey Toole as an example, like he had his time in Sevens, was exceptional at it, wanted to play his hand at 15s to make the Wallabies for one reason or another, politically or otherwise. He wasn't looked at this year, but I think he'll definitely be looked at. Wasn't looked at last year, but will be looked at this year. Michael Hooper's reversed that and he's going backwards. And I noticed he didn't get a lot of game time on the weekend. But I don't know. I kind of agree and disagree at the same time, Mickey, because I think there's a time and place for Sevens. Yes, it's got to be part of the All Blacks pathway, but it's a stepping stones to be able to prove yourself at 15s level at the next tier underneath test level. You can't just go from Sevens to test.
I think his point is saying it needs to be, and it used to be, a place where players, future All Blacks, would develop their skills. Yeah. And now, are those Sevens players, are they progressing to the All Blacks or not?
No, some of them have been parked there. Like let's be like our men's Sevens team. Like you can't tell me any of those, well, you know, Maurice Longbottom, right? He is an out-and-out Sevens player. He ain't going to play for the Wallabies. He's too small and he doesn't have the game, but he's our best Sevens player at the moment.
So should we be putting, and again, I'm not sure how much money they do put into it, but is that, should the Australian men's sevens team, should that be, like, should everything be geared towards making a good Wallaby team, is what I'm saying? And should they be using that sevens program to create better Wallabies? Or do we just leave it as a standalone competition that if we win some stuff, terrific, but it's not helping 15? So he's asking the question, is that what we want to do?
We've got to create a system where we're number one at both.
Okay.
Like the women, sevens are fantastic. They could coexist. The women's sevens team, like if you had those girls that play sevens play 15s, we'd be frigging fantastic.
So should they be playing? I guess that's his point. Should those women be using sevens to then play for the 15s?
Yeah, they don't want to. They're on such a good gig. Would you want to, if you got to play sevens and travel around the world to 10 different countries and play, you know, every weekend and go to a different spot, and then that's just
They're getting better coin as well.
They're getting good coin, great profiles, good athletes.
Because of the last decade, that's the pinnacle of the women's game here as well. Like, the 15-a-side has been left behind. Whereas, you know, in the men's game, the pinnacle is playing for the Wallabies in the 15.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to
decide what our identity is. What's our identity? Like, we would all grown up to say, oh, can't wait to watch the Hong Kong Sevens. Campo's going to be running out.
Yeah, Mark Heller, Campo. It was great. Yeah,
we were still, you know, guys
like Drew Mitchell, Julian Huxley, those guys all came through Sevens programs as well. And I think there's a huge amount of scope for young, maybe back rowers, but also outside backs to spend time there.
Yeah.
And for some of the reasons he noted, like not only just your evasive skills, your pass skills, defensive skills as well. When you've got nowhere to hide out there, you have to make your tackles. You need to, and that was something that Drew Mitchell a long time ago spoke about. Like, he got found out big time when he first started playing sevens. It was in Brisbane as well, and he got run over and bumped through because it challenged him to develop in from that point of view. Though I think Mitch, your alter ego, he's probably drawing a long bow here if he's saying that that's what got Christian Cullen and Joe Delhomme to the top of their game.
Yeah, they wouldn't be
anywhere without sevens.
But it would develop. I reckon it would have developed skills that they used in 15s.
No.
Christian Cullen wasn't he a national cricketer as well? No, it was Jeff Wilson. Sorry, Christian Wilson. Cullen was pretty.
Not for Cullen alive. No, they were freaks anyway. But I think his point is, could we be using sevens as a better vehicle to get the best rugby players in the world rather than parking blokes in there that are never going to play international 15s? And I think there's a place for Maurice Longbottom to be part of the sevens outfit because he's not going to play Wallabies. But we kind of need guys like him in the sevens outfit because he's got that real sevens flair and point of difference. But there's other blokes in that sevens outfit for Australia at the moment. You go, you'd be struggling to make a first grade team in Sydney Club Rugby, you know? Like, the pretty average footballers in a 15s environment, if they can't transition to a 15s environment, then why are they playing Australian sevens? Like, don't we want guys that can actually be like a Corey Toole that could cut their teeth at one format and then aspire to be a Wallaby and cut their teeth there? And, like, there'd be nothing that would please me more than see Corey Toole go through that system and that pathway and show his growth and development from being a sevens, an out-and-out sevens player, jet shoes, run around bloke, score tries, to someone who can play 15s rugby and still score tries and still play for Australia. I think that's his point.
I think ever since sevens has come back into the Olympics, I think one of the big things is that teams or, you know, national bodies don't look at it as that vehicle anymore. They want to get that success at that top level, whether it is an Olympic medal or
take what they get,
the World Cup. And I think that's been a big part of the reason that a lot of the teams have just gone to more of a full-time squad sevens player as opposed to wanting to risk bringing in someone like Michael Hooper for a bigger name star or someone who is going to develop but isn't going to be there in, say, 12, 18 months. Like, they want them to make a career sevens player out of.
Yeah. Like, imagine Charlie Cale at sevens. He'd go all right.
Good.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I reckon he'd go all right.
And for the record, the women were picked up the bronze and the men were fourth in Hong Kong. And just on that sevens, there was an article during the week. So World Rugby, they've come out, they're saying they're openly encouraging the best players from all the football codes to take up sevens and showcase their talents to a world audience and join the likes of Lionel Messi, Michael Jordan and Serena Williams as Olympic champions. So what are the chances of the Panthers letting Nathan Cleary or the Bronx letting Reece Walsh go and play sevens just to appease World Rugby? Zero?
Zero.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Reece Walsh should be good at sevens, I reckon. He'd go all right.
Yeah, he'd go real well. But there's no, yes, it'd be great to watch him playing sevens for Australia, but that's just never going to happen.
No. Horses for courses. Let's not pretend that. I mean, how many good athletes run around and play AFL? They're never going to play international anything, AFL blokes, and everyone thinks they're God's gift to sport. and they're never going to represent Australia and never going to play an international game.
They just they consider having to come to WA and play a game international, don't they?
Yeah. You know, we can have this argument to the cows come home. How many good athletes play AFL that could go to other codes that could boost to Australia's team's chances of medals at this and medals at that? Well,
yeah,
it is what it is. People make choices.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's us. Thank you, Mitch. Thank you, Tess.
No, it's good, boys.
No, we're we'll, force this week,
we'll,
so
we'll rustle, we rustle up a get. We'll rustle up a guest next week.
Yeah. We'll try and because the
I've
boys
got
are
just
boys are
I've home. Got just the guy. He's all I met him at Darwin this weekend, and he's all fired up to get on the show. So
you think I'm fired of, up? Doesn't mate. Mind a bit of Jesus. Banter either, does he?
Jesus.
Who is it? Who is it?
Oh, no. Keep him. No, like oh, the no, mystery we'll, talk. Yeah. Mystery caller today will keep him in. Keep the crowd in suspense.
All right.
I will. Well, you think I fire up? Wait, you hear this bloke.
All right. I look forward to getting him on. That'll be good. All right. Thanks, Tesh. Thanks, Mitch. Thanks for everyone tuning in. And we'll catch you next time on the Rugby Wrap.